Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. The pals are Arturo.
Hello, everyone.
And Gauz.
Hey.
And I'm your host, Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about Fatal Fury the Motion Picture, aka Garu Densetsu the Motion Picture, a movie from 1994. Fatal Fury City of the Wolves has its second season beginning this month, and I liked the idea of starting this year with Fatal Fury just like we started last year.
Fun fact, the last character that they added in the last season, Mr. Big, was supposed to appear in this anime, but then it didn't. And Mr. Big was in the Art of Fighting anime that we covered. I can't remember him, but he was there.
But yeah, I remember not liking that, but other than that, I don't remember anything about Art of Fighting.
He was the main bad guy.
This was animated by Studio Comet, the studio behind Fatal Fury, Legend of the Hungry Wolf, and Art of Fighting, both of which we covered for this podcast. Fatal Fury the Motion Picture has an annualist score of 61%. Fatal Fury is a long-running fighting game franchise by SNK, and Fatal Fury City of the Wolves came out last year. We didn't watch this anime back then because we had lots of other stuff to cover at the time.
And there's more Fatal Fury animes, at least two more.
My short synopsis for this one is, join Terry Bogard on a world-spanning adventure to stop an evil twin. Arturo, what do you have?
Lockhorn gathers the Infinity Stones while his sister gathers the Fatal Fury Avengers to fight him off. Let's hope there's water.
Angles?
An archaeologist digs up a treasure and then a girl shoots him with her nip-slip key blasts. More stuff happens, but I didn't care to include that in the synopsis.
Right, well, we open on archaeologists in Alexandria, Egypt, because Stargate came out the same year and The Mummy was being shopped around Hollywood, so the profession was in the zeitgeist. They find the armor of Mars in a tomb, well, a bit of it, but the dig is attacked by a group of elementals who kill everyone and steal the armor. The leader, named Laocoon, puts it on and boasts that he'll soon obtain all six pieces of armor.
He already had the armor of Snickers and other Nestle products.
Cuts to Terry Bogard talking about a storm coming. And then we get the titles. Didn't Ken talk about a coming storm in the last thing we watched?
Yes.
There's always a storm coming.
He had to fucking exposition about there being a storm, even though we saw that there was going to be a storm.
We return to a locker room where a fighter is getting pumped before going out to a kickboxing ring. It's Joe Higashi. Mai Shiranui is watching in the audience, sitting next to Master Miller from Metal Gear Solid. Or maybe it's Liquid Snake. The two look exactly the same. Actually, it's Andy Bogard, who those two are clearly based on because Kojima's a hack. I said it.
Whoa. This is not a political podcast.
What did Kojima do politically wise? I even know. I'm out of the loop. I want to know now.
We can't be making statements that are throwing hands over here. Come on.
Joe wins and is given his award by actress, idol, and model Reiko Chiba. She is an actual actress, idol, and model.
Who was she voiced by? Was she voiced by someone else?
In Japan, she was voiced by Reiko Chiba. She did the Japanese dub for the Pink Ranger in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. She also played the Terror Ranger in Kyoru Sentai Zuo Ranger, which Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is based off, but I like that they brought her back when they imported the American version of that show.
Which Pink Ranger?
Yeah, actually, that is a good point. Did she do both of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, or did she just do... I didn't actually look into it that deeply.
It probably just did all the Pink Rangers. Like, they're all white girls. They couldn't tell the difference in Japan.
At a reception later, Mai is now wearing... Is it Mai or May? Because I appear to have written both.
It's Mai.
Mai is now wearing a red wig and forces Andy to wear a stupid bolo tie. They meet up
What do you have against bolo ties? Also, what was happening while you were watching this anime? You were so angry during the synopsis.
They meet up with Joe and they all wonder where Terry is. He's in Neo Geo Land, an amusement arcade, and as he goes to leave, a fleeing woman runs into him. Her pursuers sneak up on her. No, I'm kidding. They smash through a glass ceiling directly above her.
Wait. Just before that, when she runs past like three guys and one of them says, "Yeah, I saw your sister naked."
Yeah, so I saw your sister naked. Why is that the start of this story?
I had to like go back and see what it says in subtitles. And I think it was just something generic. I wonder.
Yeah, they do that a couple of times. They put in more mature dialogue for some reason.
It's also here in Neo Geo Land that we find out that Terry sucks at video games. You know, in a video game adaptation.
Classic.
Terry fights these people off and they phase through a wall to escape. So why did they smash through the ceiling, drawing attention to themselves?
They needed the epic entries. Like, if you don't add that to a fighting game, then people start complaining, oh, the loading screens are so boring.
At the reception, the fleeing woman arrives and asks around, trying to find Terry Bogard. Kim Kafwan, the Taekwondo champion from Korea we met in the last movie, also turns up looking for Terry. He's brought his family too, which flusters Joe for some reason.
Fun fact, both of the little kids, his sons, later became playable characters in the games.
That is a fun fact.
They weren't kids, though, when they became playable characters. They were all grown up.
Oh, that's disappointing. I want to beat up some children.
Watch geese take on a six-year-old.
I was already adding the game to my card and everything.
There's a scream and everyone turns to see a bloodied figure being held aloft by someone who resembles the attackers from the arcade. Kim attacks, and hopefully his wife didn't want more than their two kids, as Kim is punched in the nuts so hard he coughs up blood. He quickly loses the fight and says that the fight isn't over yet before losing the fight some more. However, he rallies and splits the attacker's mask, winning the fight. The fleeing woman speaks up and introduces herself as Sulia, explaining that the masks control the fighters wearing them. Actually, I just extrapolated that from what she said. She doesn't explain the masks, and they are never explained.
No, in fact, this is one of the last times they appear. We introduce like this main villain with like a mask, and everyone's like, oh, this is going to be a signature villain. Next scene, the guy's like, anyway, they're too obvious. Let's go a little more subtle. They're breaking through too many glass rooms.
Sulia asks Terry to go to Rhode Island in New England, North America with her. Wait, my mistake. She means Rhodes, a Greek island. Andy, Mai, and Joe decide to join Terry. And while they travel to a cave on the island, we get a history lesson about Alexander the Great and Babylon. But the short story is that this awesome armor survived an inferno and tried to destroy Babylon by itself. So it was split up so that it couldn't be reunited. If someone wears all six pieces, it will make them a god. There's a cave-in, and Terry tackles Sulia deeper into the cave. Terry is injured, so Sulia uses magic to heal him. They make their way to a chamber hidden behind a waterfall, and the wall paintings show martial arts stances that the group are familiar with. There is a map which shows the location of two of the pieces, but the final one is a mystery. They split up, Andy and May going to Baghdad, Iraq, the rest going to Antakya, Turkey. Elsewhere, Lacorn is at a resort which he apparently funded. This never gets explained. In Laocoon's throne room, which he has in his beach resort, his minions, who I called elementals earlier because it looked like they were using powers and not martial arts, and then later it also... I'm going to stick with elementals. They are sent to deal with the heroes. There's Hauer, who wears a mask, and Jamin, who likes reggae music.
You can't convince me Jamin.
I knew that I'd get that laugh out of girls.
I was just waiting for a moment to cut in and tell you that none of the bad guys in this are actually playable characters in any of the games, but the jamming joke just killed.
The other one, has the redhead been given a name yet? Because I didn't catch it. Her defining feature is that her martial arts costume was held on by her nipples.
We'll call her Nipple Lady.
I think I just call her
Wait, no, that's... No, never mind. If we call her Nipple Lady, we'll confuse her with all the other characters in this.
In a hotel in Turkey, a photograph falls out of Terry's pocket. It's of Lily Maguire, his love interest, who was murdered by geese. The evil character, not a flock of birds.
Oh, I was terrified. I was like, oh no, geese. I knew they were evil.
Sulia is curious, but they go to dinner before she brings it up. Terry says that Lily died, and Sulia is overcome by guilt over seeming jealous. Later, Terry lays in bed looking at the photo and hallucinates Lily, telling him to date someone else. He's woken from his dream, it wasn't a hallucination, by a knock at the door. It's Sulia coming to apologise in her pyjamas. They gaze at each other before separating and going to sleep. I mean, or perhaps they stood in the hallway all night, staring at each other. It just cuts to the library the next day. They find out that the armour piece is buried beneath a police station, which exploded. Except the newspaper that Joe shows them says that a police station in Milan, Italy was blown up by a car bomb, and they're in Turkey. The text of the newspaper is copied several times, I looked it up, it's actually about the Via Palestro massacre from the 27th of July 1993, which killed 5 and injured 12.
Well, that's not what you should be adding to this.
No, just, I mean, Ace is saying that it clearly is the best anime ever because it's historically accurate.
It just takes place in the wrong country. Terry opens the paper and we're shown that the information apparently about the ancient ruins beneath the police station actually covers terrorism in Egypt, unrest in Somalia, and a plane bombing in Britain. Like, they've taken these newspaper clippings from multiple sources. Since the bombing was a week ago, Sulia says that she didn't feel her brother put on the armour piece like she has before. Terry continues reading and says that the ancient ruins were plundered 900 years ago by crusaders. Joe complains that they'll never find it in Europe, but like it's probably on display in a British museum, that's where we keep everything we stole. Terry suggests that it's in Stroheim Castle because Krause's ancestors might have grabbed it, because they recognised Krause's fighting style from the cave. Joe is sent to Baghdad to tell the others, but nearby, Jamin is listening in on their conversation. At the airport before leaving, Joe tells Terry to seduce Sulia, but Sulia overhears and takes offence at being called just a kid while wearing a middle school uniform with a miniskirt. We cut to unexpected nudity in Iraq as Maya is showering.
Okay, I'm sorry. At this point, you can't say unexpected nudity. It's been happening in every movie.
It's not every movie. But the start of that sentence, have those words ever been put in the same sentence together? It cuts to unexpected nudity in Iraq.
It's just that at this point, it's like we've seen Maya naked twice now, right?
I don't remember all of the unexpected nudity, and I really should like check how many times I've written the word nudity in my notes.
Maybe what we should start doing when an anime ends without nudity, we say expected non-nudity. I mean, unexpected non-nudity.
Mai tries to bed Andy, but he's asexual or something. The next day, they discover that the armor has been stolen by Genghis Khan in 1258. Joe meets them and explains what they found.
We need to go back in time and get Genghis Khan.
We need to stop Genghis Khan. Joe meets them and explains what they found in Turkey. Andy realizes that if Krause's fighting style meant a piece of armor wound up in Germany, then their fighting style means the other piece might be in China. I mean, they already knew that Genghis Khan took it back to China, so that wasn't much of a leap. Mai goes to a payphone to call Master Jubei, who might know about the armor. While she talks, Joe grabs Andy and asks how Mai was in bed. But the asexual fighter doesn't understand. Mai discovers that Master Jubei was kidnapped 3 days ago. Actually, that's what I thought they were talking about. I must have blanked out for a second because that isn't what happened.
But here's the thing. Went
missing or something?
That's what I understood as well. I was watching, I was like, uh-huh. So they took Jubei and, okay, got it. And then later he popped up and I was like, wait a minute. Why are we in a club?
So I understood the same thing as you. Great. Good job, anime.
I think Master Jubei was kidnapped by his own horny instinct.
We cut to Laocoon, who decides to go to Germany to help Jamin because he might get to fight Terry. Cut to Germany, and Terry and Sulia are attacked while riding a motorbike. It's Jamin, and Terry is shocked to discover that he's stronger than Krauser as they fight in a parking structure. So Terry runs away. He's injured as they escape to the roof, where they find Laocoon waiting for them.
I find it really stupid that they're fighting Jamin, and then Terry's like, let's leave, and they take the elevator, which is the one thing you're not supposed to do in a catastrophe. They're just standing in the elevator looking down at Jamin, being like, goodbye, expecting nothing bad to happen.
They were just blown off of the motorbike with energy blasts, and they don't think, hey, maybe Jamin can fire energy blasts.
Maybe we shouldn't, you know, just stand there in an elevator liable to fall.
We're safe from his fists. What was that about energy blasts? Laocoon asks Terry to join him. And when the fighter declines, Terry quickly gets beaten up. Sulia jumps in the way of a killing blow, making Laocoon pull away. And then Terry blows up the parking structure. He also grabs Sulia and leaps into the River Main.
Which again, what is it with Terry and rivers and water? He didn't beat them until he didn't beat Krauser until there was water.
This is true. And geese, there was that pond.
Yeah, do you see?
The antagonists survive unharmed, and then we see Sulia dragging Terry through a sewer. We cut to the tamest rave that has ever happened, where Andy and May are to meet Master Jubei. So my next note is, wait, who got kidnapped?
And if he went missing, how did they know where to find him?
They say Master Jubei said to meet him here, and that got me thinking, wait, wasn't he kidding?
Wait, that's a good point. So even if he supposedly went missing, oh my lord.
Andy is distracted by Lawrence Blood and then accosted by Reiko Chiba, you know, the actor idol from earlier. She never reappears after this point. Master Jubei pops up, but before Andy can talk to him, May steps out on stage. We don't see much of her show, in quotation marks, before a guy called Billy enters the control room. Down on the floor, Jubei tells Andy about Ryuo Temple, a place in China that he knows of, and keeps getting distracted by May. Again, I'm saying May, it's Mai, isn't it? Billy Kane appears, and Andy is shocked that he's alive. Did we see this dude in one of the other movies? I didn't mention him in my notes if we did, because I looked for it.
Wasn't he an art of fighting anime?
Before they can fight, however, Hawa pops up, but then leaves without a fight. And then Billy leaves immediately to report the incident to Geese. Yeah, no, he doesn't come back. He's in it for this scene, blows up a bamboo forest, and done. We cut to an abandoned church in a forest near Frankfurt. Okay. Where Sulia is attempting to heal Terry. She's too weak, so decides to strip down to her underwear so that she can release all of her power at once whilst lying on top of him.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
I do really feel constricted by all my clothes and I cannot let out my full power with them on.
I feel like this is the right time to mention that throughout this whole film, I was thinking how hard this film would fail the Bechdel test.
What test? Sorry, what is that?
Bechdel test.
The Bechdel test basically is there at least one scene of two female characters having a conversation which does not mention any men at all. Which, yeah, when you start looking for it, it's shocking how often two women are there just to talk about one of the male characters.
Well, I normally don't think about it, but in here, like, every time a female character does something or says something, it's about a man. And I was just cringing. Let me remove my clothes so I can heal you better.
Anyway, Terry is dreaming of his dead girlfriend, and he soon wakes to find Sulia on top of him, and he doesn't question it. Sulia talks about her father and her childhood. Apparently her father was killed by his business partner so that he could take credit for the discovery of a piece of the armor of Mars. When confronted by Laocoon, the business partner shot him next to the armor, which attached itself to Laocoon, allowing him to heal and kill the business partner. I say kill, vaporize is probably a better term.
This is probably the first time I've sympathized with a villain. Sure, Laocoon takes it a bit far and then decides he's going to, well, become a god. Which is like, if you need to become a god to avenge your father, you really need some fighting practice. Holy moly.
An argument could be made that the armor was possessing him.
Yeah, that does get brought up later.
But Terry promises to keep her safe, then kisses her tears away. We cut to Hebei province in China, where Mai has been waiting for 2 hours outside of a temple due to being a woman. I mean, she's not allowed in. Not the fact that she's a woman is what has kept her waiting. Suddenly, there's unexpected nudity as Hawa uses wind to strip her. But it's only for a moment as she backflips and fully dresses herself in her battle clothes. Don't question the fact that she had bare arms and legs, and we saw her nipples, so she 100% was not wearing that outfit underneath her chinongsam. The two tussle, but she's no match for him. However, the noise causes Andy to remember her and hurry down to help.
Is she no match for him because he's a woman? She's a woman ace? Same reason she's waiting on set for 2 hours.
Andy lets Hauer have the box with the armor, figuring that he'll catch Hauer off guard. Andy is quickly defeated. In Germany, Lawrence Blood is in Stroheim Castle looking at paintings when the redhead, working with Laocoon, sneaks in, spotting the armor piece in one of those very paintings. Because she can't read in her head, Lawrence hears her reading the plaque aloud and challenges her. He gets a lucky hit in, revealing her nipple by cutting her costume, but she swiftly defeats him. Time passes and Joe arrives moments before Sulia and Terry. Joe has managed to do a lot of travel in record time, huh? Sulia collapses as she feels Laocoon putting on the breastplate and, I want to say, armband as well. I couldn't remember what the final piece of the armor was other than the breastplate.
It was nipple rings.
We cut to him and he sends his peons to fetch Sulia and her pendant. The protagonists return to Rhode Island.
In record time again.
This is expensive. And Sulia laments her failure. Joe randomly punches a wall in frustration, revealing the hiding place of the final piece, the mask, in the Dead Sea. Specifically, it's the Dead Sea Israel, they say, but it points to the middle of the Dead Sea, which is where the borders of Israel, West Bank, and Jordan meet. So I don't know where they get Israel from. We cut to Jerusalem, and I'm curious who is paying for all of this. Joe has no money, Terry has no money, Sulia appears to be unemployed. Is it Andy and Mai? Wait, since Joe has no money, how did he hire a supercar to get to Krauser's castle in Germany? Like, he's not in a normal car, he's in a supercar.
Yeah, that's a good question to realize.
Anyway, it's nighttime and Mai and Sulia are sat at a pool while Andy slaps a tree and the other two get drunk. Terry and Joe are drugged or something by the antagonists, and Sulia agrees to go with them if they don't hurt or kill any of her new friends. Jamin takes Sulia, and the other two attack Mai. But Andy reappears to save her, breaking Howard's mask. Mai gives us more unexpected nudity by stripping herself during an attack. And then the enemies are defeated, so Andy kisses Mai. Later, Laocoon confirms to Sulia that Jamin has located the final piece. Laocoon uses magic to raise a sunken temple. At its deepest point, the Dead Sea is 188 meters, which is like 1 2/3 of football field, or 3 American football fields. I don't think that hidden temple would have been hidden all of this time.
No one was looking for it. They didn't know.
No one went snorkeling in that part of the Dead Sea.
It's called the Dead Sea. You don't want to die in there.
You don't drink it.
They heard the name Dead Sea and didn't go there. This asshole who went to Japan to the suicide spot wasn't alive yet to go there.
The Dead Sea is a popular tourist spot. Anyway, Laocoon takes Sulia inside, and once the protagonists arrive, they find a surprise. Masked goons! Yeah, they did come back. Terry leaves the others to fight while he goes into the temple, but Jamin blocks his way. Meanwhile, inside, Laocoon finds the final piece of armor. Outside, Jamin loses on purpose, allowing Terry to go and save Sulia and maybe Laocoon himself. Terry is unfortunately too late to stop Laocoon from donning the armor, and so Laocoon tosses Terry around like a ragdoll for a bit. But Andy comes to the rescue, and Mai flashes her nipples multiple times to help, and Joe is there.
Joe also flashes his nipples all the time. I guess it doesn't count as flashing anymore if he just has them out all the time.
This podcast is very sexist. We don't talk about male unexpected nudity with Joe.
It's not unexpected because he's a martial artist, so he's got to have his nipples out.
Good point.
The only equivalent thing is when they first go to the cave, he has a banana hammock.
Yeah, he did. Terry tells Mai to get Sulia out of there, which she does. However, Sulia soon returns, injuring herself as a way of interfering with the armor, using ill-defined twin powers. She goes to stab herself in the chest, so to stop her, Laocoon fires an energy blast at her. What is this? You can't die if I kill you first. Terry steps in the way, however, to save her from the beam. So she stabs herself.
Right in the tit.
Good job, Terry.
She tells Terry to hit Laocoon in the breastplate, so he does. We get one more surprise nudity as Sulia goes full frontal for some reason. And then Terry cradles yet another dying woman, and she thanks him for stopping Laocoon. Terry kisses her, and she dies. But that's not the end. The pieces of armor melt and run straight towards the statue of Mars, powering it up and giving it life. It attacks the group, and Laocoon jumps in the way, getting vaporized. Terry tries to fight it, but is knocked back, until he hallucinates Sulia calling his name, letting him do one more attack. He wins, and the temple blows up or something, so the group look out over the Dead Sea one more time, then walk away. And we get the credits. I won't ask if this was a good adaptation, because technically it's not an adaptation of a specific game. It's pretty much just existing as a sequel to Fatal Fury Legend of the Hungry Wolf and Fatal Fury 2 The New Battle. So we'll move straight to, is it a Yata, Nani, or a Baka, Arturo?
Surprisingly, I want to give this one a Yata. I actually had fun. I liked the story. It felt more... I think my main problem with fighting animes is just Don't get me wrong, I understand, but it's just fighting for almost sometimes purposelessly. Meanwhile, here it felt like there was a reason for the narrative, even if sometimes it was a bit iffy. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. And I wish the fights were a little bit better animated, but you also can't expect much from so many years ago.
And Goose?
For me, it was a nanny. I liked animation fine, but I feel like it was too long. I had trouble keeping track of what everyone was doing. Characters showed up for a scene not to be seen again, ironically. Yeah, it was overbloated. And some stuff was just dumb.
I gave it a yetta, but I do wonder why was Geese even in this? It's not even setting up a sequel. This was the last one.
Mm.
So does it deserve its Annie List score of 61%?
I get the score. Again, I think I like this against all odds, but I get it because it does go on a bit long and a lot of it is nonsensical. But I personally would have gone higher simply because, I don't know, I feel like a 6.1 is, I guess it's good enough. Maybe I'm just being too nice to it.
I want to commend the animators for how committed they were to nipple slips and later mice camel toe, how detailed they were.
I didn't even notice the camel toe.
No, like, I don't know, maybe it's because, like, my experience of animation, but I noticed, like, how, like, when they show her, like, crotch, just how detailed the outline of everything is. Like, she might as well not have the panties on, because you can tell. And also, the thing that I mentioned in my synopsis, the nip slip key blast attack, and I'm gonna post it in the chat. I went frame by frame. One frame is close up of her tits, and it shows half nipples, and then soon after, there's one frame that's a close-up of a bare nipple. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's...
Like,
Well, going back to what you were saying about the level of detail, when Sulia was stabbing herself, you saw her top tighten against her nipples. Like, she had erect nipples, and when she stabbed herself, her top clearly, like, got tighter and the nipples were more defined. That was not required for the scene.
I also imagine, again, well, not again, I don't have tits, so I don't know, but I would imagine that it's not very comfortable to stab yourself in the heart through the breast. Like, I feel like that would be awkward. Like, you can go, like, through the sternum or and go through the side or above the breast. I don't know, it just feels awkward to me.
Thinking about how the breast is structured, that's probably
not what you'd want to do.
Not with a piece of rock that she uses. Might work better with a knife. But anyway, yes, I agree with its 61%. It's not the best. I enjoyed it, but I would not give it higher than 61%.
Yeah, when I thought about it, I was like, maybe I give it a 65, and I'm like, okay, I'm being a little pedantic then. 61 is fine.
Right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining me, Tara and Gauze.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGreen.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Greencast podcast. Until next time, game on.